This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. On this segment of the program, we're going to be talking about kind of updating and maybe going back to basics about immigration and nationality laws. My guest is a very good friend of this program and of you as an audience, Antonio Nieras. He's a member of the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. We'll tell you what that means. He's a specialist in immigration and nationality law, certified by the Board of Legal Specialization. His offices are in Burlingame. Funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, which certifies the following 11 fields of law: immigration and nationality law, appellate law, bankruptcy law, criminal law, estate planning, trust and probate law, family law, franchise and distribution law, taxation law, workers' compensation law, legal malpractice law, and admiralty and maritime law. Additional funding is provided by the family law section of the State Bar and the lawyer referral service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. Tony, welcome back.
Thank you, Chuck.
Good evening. It's very good to be back.
Very nice to have you back here. Tony, just briefly, being a member of the Board of Legal Specialization, that's something other than being a certified specialist. What does that mean?
Well,
Do you carry a big club? Or
I wish I did. The board basically oversees the specialization program of the bar. And particularly, it oversees the advisory commissions of the different areas of specialization. We oversee the activities, make sure that that the specialization exams are on track, that they're...
These are for people who would like to become certified specialists, the exams.
Correct, mm-hmm. Right. And to make sure as well that the advisory commissions are up to task in their responsibilities mm-hmm. of certifying the applicants for mm-hmm. specialization, as well as recertifying specialists who would like to continue their specialization.
What does that mean, recertifying? I'm not familiar with that.
Recertifying basically means that your certification has a finite period, and after that period, should you wish to continue your certification as a specialist, you need to apply for recertification, and it basically will ask whether whether that applicant has completed the necessary educational activities, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Whether or not the he resubmits a list of persons who would be contacted for review to make sure that his or her peers still recognize the expertise of that particular person.
What does it mean from the public standpoint to seek out in any one of these 11 specialty areas? What does it mean for someone to want to seek out a certified specialist? What is that giving the consumer of legal services?
Well, this is akin to, let's say, a doctor who's certified as a thoracic surgeon, mm-hmm. Thoracic surgery. He's mm-hmm. a specialist in that particular area. So in this specialized world, it's always good to get someone who's really concentrated on the particular area of practice that you'd like.
Does it generally mean if someone is a certified specialist that person, that lawyer, actually can charge or does, from the practical standpoint, charge more money for the legal services than someone who may be very experienced in the same area of law, but is not a certified specialist?
No, what do you call this? This does not mean that at all. And in fact, the funny thing is that as a certified specialist, you have additional fees and costs that you incur, but you don't necessarily have the right or the inclination even to charge more.
Really, that's very interesting, and that's what I certainly was aware of. Mm-hmm. But generally speaking, and I don't know that there is any general speaking, but for the specialties, the 11 specialties, if a consumer of one of them or any one of them wants to have an initial consultation, I know that there are, because the Board of Legal Specialization has been funding this program for, I think, just about 22 years.
Yes.
Since about 1990.
Yes.
Is there some kind of general approach that certified specialists will give a no-charge initial consultation, or is that not the case, generally speaking?
No, I think generally speaking, there may be practitioners who will have a general policy of no-charge consultations.
Is that more than not, or is it hard to say?
It's hard to say.
Okay.
It's hard to say.
All right. Well, thank you for explaining. I think it's very important that everyone have an idea of what it means to be a certified specialist.
I think that...
As well as a consumer, certified specialist.
I think for the consumer, from the consumer's point of view, it is important to try to speak to a specialist, because you have a... you would have the sense of some confidence that the person that you're speaking with, mm-hmm. being a certified specialist, would have a greater focus on the particular problem or situation that you present to him or her.
Okay. Naturalization. I know you wanted to talk about naturalization tonight. And by the way, we will get to this. One of the listeners of this program sent me an email some a couple of months ago or so, and wanted to hear someone, and I had in mind you, talk a little bit about dual citizenship. So we'll get to that in a few minutes. But let's talk about some basics here with naturalization. What does it mean? Why should someone, if someone is here legally, they're not undocumented, but they're here legally, and they seem to be doing fine, et cetera, why should they want to become naturalized? What's the point?
Well, the point of immigration, in my mind, is really should be targeted to become a citizen of the United States. When you're here, working here legally, you've lived here, you've grew up here, you've made connections here, it just seems that you become, as they say in the corporate parlance, a stakeholder in this country. And the highest honor that you can do for the country is to apply to become a citizen of the country. Now, citizenship has many responsibilities, but it also has many rights, and foremost among those rights is really the right to vote. With that right, then you are a true stakeholder, in the sense that you make your views known and you actually act on those views by indicating the choices that you want to make, mm-hmm. as far as the direction of the society, the direction of the country. I think it's the culmination of the immigration process, as it were, and I feel that people should, if they're otherwise qualified, really seriously think about taking that step and becoming a citizen.
Is it a difficult thing to do?
No, it's not. It's pretty straightforward. If you have the necessary residence requirement, generally a 5-year as a permanent resident, you're a person of good moral character, you're able to show that you truly have a sense of the history and the government of the United States, then you can apply for and obtain citizenship.
You take an exam, do you not, to become naturalized?
Yes, an exam, but it's a basic civics exam. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's not a long drawn out exam. It's more a sense of that you understand where the United States came from, how it was created, what its principles, the principles that it stands for, mm-hmm. for other countries, and some basic information.
Let me do this. Let me mention, since I did just a couple of minutes ago, the email that the listener sent to me asking for some discussion about dual citizenship. It was very interesting, I thought, in her email. And I sent her an email, by the way, I think yesterday, telling her that you would be on the program, and I'm sure she's listening this evening. One of the questions, or one of the thoughts she had in her email was As she said, I realize there are varying regulations with other countries outside of the United States that may make this tricky, that is, having dual citizenship. Mm-hmm. And she goes on, with Homeland Security in place, I'm curious as to what kinds of behavior send up red flags now, in addition to what is acceptable, permissible in general. Now, I don't know what she had in mind, and I don't know that you can talk about that. I mean, if you're landing at the airport, and let's say you are a dual citizen, and let's say you're doing some kind of strange things like hiding behind palm trees or something, I would think that ICE or Homeland Security would wonder, why is this person hiding?
Correct. Well, if you take periodic trips to...
if you got a big bag of money, if you got a big bag of money on you, and you've told Homeland Security, I do have some cash, it's $10,000, and it turns out it's 50, and you're here to pay for marijuana, et cetera, then right. You do have a problem.
But correct.
Go
That's
ahead.
Correct.
What thoughts as a certified specialist do you have?
Well, the dual citizenship issue, Chuck, is always very interesting because of the conflict of laws involved. And I think that I want to start off by stating that the United States generally looks with disfavor upon... United States citizens maintaining dual nationality.
And you are saying this as a citizen, not as a representative of the government, right? You are not a representative of the government.
That's correct, Chuck.
Yeah. You're a private individual.
I am a private individual. These are my personal views. But I do realize that the government doesn't favor dual citizenship. In fact, during the naturalization process, there's a specific question whether or not the applicant renounces former allegiances. And I believe that on the oath of naturalization, you take an oath to renounce all previous mm-hmm. citizenship. Mm-hmm. But going back to the conflict of laws issues, if the country that you were formerly a citizen of does not retains your citizenship, even if they realize that you've naturalized in
another
country.
If they do retain it or not?
If they retain it.
If they retain your citizenship.
Right.
Okay.
Then the United States cannot tell you, no, you can't do that.
So Home Security can't...
they have no authority
grab
to
the person and say, hey, give me
your
passport.
No.
Good. I'm glad to hear that.
They cannot do that. In the same way, mm-hmm. there are generally... citizenship has a two-prong process, whether the country would recognize citizenship by birth or what's called the you sanguinis or the blood. Mm-hmm. You solis, the place of the birth,
yes.
Or you sanguinis or the blood, mm-hmm. whether or not, you know, if your parents are both Americans, mm-hmm. then you may have claim to citizenship even if you're born abroad. Mm-hmm. In the same token, if the country that your parents are from, not the United States, recognizes the idea that you would be able to transmit your citizenship by blood to your mm-hmm. offspring, if that offspring is born in the United States, then the U.S. law would recognize that child to be a citizen because mm-hmm. The United States generally recognizes place of birth as determinative mm-hmm. of mm-hmm. of citizenship. So it's a very interesting discussion about this possible conflict of laws issues that mm-hmm. arise in dual citizenship. And I think because of the complexities that may be involved, then the idea is that the U.S. generally disfavors dual citizenship. Much the same way that you don't want dual allegiances, you mm-hmm. just want one allegiance.
If you have two passports, one
yes.
for the United States and let's say one for Italy, because in this particular situation, this person is a dual citizen of
yes.
America and Italy. If you have two passports, in other words, and Italy. Doesn't have a problem with your being an American citizen and retaining your Italian citizenship,
yes.
then you have no obligation, do you, under American law, to turn over your Italian passport.
That's correct.
Okay. All right. Well, I don't know that we've helped her at all, but I'm awfully glad that she posed the question.
There can be practicalities there. If you enter Italy, generally you'll enter on your Italian passport.
Yeah.
Because you're
so
Italian.
So you come back, you've left the country.
Right.
You've got your Italian passport stamped in Italy.
Correct.
You come back here with your American passport. You're landing, let's say, in San Francisco with your American passport. It shows nothing where you've been. What's the problem?
Well.
Or is there?
I don't think there should be a problem, but a curious officer can ask, you know
where you been? where you been hiding? Okay. All right. Well, I hope you who sent this email to us, this is of some help to you, although it is not an easy answer type of situation, is it?
No,
depending on
not,
the country.
Right, yes.
This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're talking about immigration and nationality laws. Our good friend on this program who's been, you've been a guest of this program, gosh, what is it, at least, what, 8, 10 years? What is it, would you say? Is it even more?
No, I think about maybe 10 is.
About 10 years.
Yeah.
J. Antonio Nieras. It's spelled Nierras. He's a member of the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. He's a specialist in immigration and nationality law certified by the board, and his offices are in Burlingame, and I'm very pleased that you are here. You've spent a lot of time involved with the Board of Legal Specialization. I think, weren't you at one point the chair of the Advisory Commission on Immigration and Nationality Law?
That's correct.
For 3 years?
For 3 years.
You never learned your lesson, did you? And now 3 years as a member of the board.
Yes, okay. That's correct. Yes. I have good memory, Chuck.
Yeah, I'm wondering, did you put yourself in a position that, I know this is your last year as a member of the board, did you put yourself in a position that there's going to be another 3-year hitch?
I don't know.
Oh, dear. No, that's not good. That's not good. Okay. This station earlier today on the 5 o'clock news did a very nice interview with a young man who is undocumented in this country. He's been going to high school here rather successfully. He's in college right now, and foolishly as he may be, he said he wants to go on to law school.
Oh, boy.
Oh, yeah. In any event, he has been helped under, apparently, the DREAM Act.
Yes.
Would you talk just a little bit about that?
Well, there's a California version and a federal version. The federal version didn't go, but the California version did. Basically, it provided a pool of funds for qualified individuals to support their education, higher education costs.
Which made all the difference for a number of these young people.
Correct. And I always like to think about this as a gift to people who are truly deserving of the gift.
Mm-hmm.
Generally, these individuals have been brought here to this country by their parents when they were very young. They grew up here, went to school, grew up here. They've totally assimilated to the society, to the culture. They want to better themselves and become truly productive members of the society. Unfortunately, because of their immigration status, there's a hurdle that they have to jump, and that is to try to go through their ambitions and their dreams despite the fact of this immigration or this non-immigration status that they hold. So there had been moves in Congress to allow some sort of legalization for these individuals.
On a national basis.
On a national basis. Mm-hmm. And this would be, I think, a great step to help them.
But that didn't get anywhere.
No, it went somewhere, but it fizzled out. And I think that it's tragic because a lot of people's hopes were really kindled by this, and that's why you had the huge amounts of demonstrations and rallies to show support for this act. unfortunately, there's also the view that, but these, you know, the in a list of priorities, this shouldn't be a priority because there are so many other important things that need the attention of the Congress. They are actually without status, and that by legalizing their status, the A word was being used, that you're granting amnesty, which of course rubbed some people the wrong way, and they decided against supporting this kind of legislation. I think that in the coming Congress, it should be brought up again. Chuck, the idea is that the numbers is huge. The number is huge.
12 million in this country,
right? And it's growing. It's a growing number. So to close your eyes and think that immigration is basically protecting the borders and making sure that terrorists don't come in disregards the fact that there are so many people here in this country that need some sort of legislation to provide them pathways to
I think
legal immigration.
One of the problems that I'm concerned about, and I had a case like this as in my position as a deputy DA for San Mateo County. It was kind of a day laborer type of thing where the person who had this business was taking undocumented persons as employees and was really not paying them a fair wage.
Okay.
That kind of stuff.
Right.
Under California law, I was able to bring actually an action against the owner of that business for that kind of discrimination.
Yes.
So that there are protections there. But let me come back to this young man who was interviewed earlier today on this station.
Yes.
And he said that when he and his brother were very young, his mom felt that there was no future for them in Mexico in terms of school. The schools were not what his mom thought he and his brother should have a chance to be in. So she brought them to the United States.
Okay.
Now, okay, he has gotten some money through the state of California, as I understand it. It's helped him go to college. It probably will help him go to law school.
Yes.
What happens then when he finishes law school? What is he facing at that point in terms of what he has to do to stay here legally?
Well, you know, I wanted to point out a little news tidbit that I read, and the headline was "Bar Card Without Green Card."
Oh, yeah, yeah, so, the bar card is not something. The state bar card is not something that keeps you here.
Correct.
If you're undocumented.
Correct. So you know the practicality. The reality is that even if you become a lawyer, because you passed the bar, you went to school and passed the bar,
you still have a potential problem.
You have a big problem because you're not documented. I don't think you can also take the bar, or what do you call this? There may be some requirement to show
that you are a citizen or you have some legal standing
status,
here.
Right?
Yeah, very interesting. Yeah. Well,
but it's
a problem.
It's a problem.
It's a real problem.
And,
I'm hoping that there will be some improvement in how these people are dealt with in years to come.
Yes.
What I'd like to do is I'd like to mention to you, by the way, next week we are going to do our Call a Lawyer Night, which we usually do on the last Wednesday of the month. The topic will be employment law, and I'll have some very loyal attorneys here, certified specialists, and also people who are not certified specialists taking your calls off the air. While I'm doing a program on the air on employment law, they'll be taking your calls off the air, and you might want to jot down the number. We have a variety of legal areas that the attorneys will be representing, and that number is 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917 for Call a Lawyer Night, which is next week. Tony, we have on the statewide version of the program about another 4 minutes or so. And for those of you who are listening to us live, we do continue in the Bay Area. We continue on the internet at www.kaow.org for a second half hour. This is when you'll have a chance to call in, ask a question of my guest, make a comment, whatever you feel that you want to do. Of course, in the area of immigration and nationality law, no landlord-tenant calls, if you would, tonight. In any event, well, how about a couple of other topics or a couple of other things that you might want to make reference to before we finish the half hour?
Well, there was a Supreme Court ruling that came out in March that basically said that the exception of permanent residents who left the country and came back, if they had criminal convictions, they were subject to deportation. But
what does that mean by criminal conviction?
Well,
does that include like driving under the influence of alcohol?
It would, but this would not necessarily include those kinds of convictions.
Moral turpitude, I suppose,
moral
is what we're looking for.
Right. Convictions that would generally make you inadmissible to the United States. And the scenario is when a permanent resident who's been convicted here leaves the country and on his return is questioned by the Customs and Border Protection people and say, well, you know, you have this conviction which makes you inadmissible, so we can't admit you anymore. And the reaction generally of the person is that, but it was a simple visit to my home country because there was a wedding. I only took a few days off. Now I'm trying to return. I'm a permanent resident. And previously, if the conviction fell within the new law, then he would be inadmissible and be
he would not be admissible.
He would
not be admissible.
He would not
here.
Be admissible, even if he was.
However, if he had not left the country in spite of that conviction, that would be a moot issue.
Correct. That's correct.
Interesting. Let me do this. In case you are interested in getting any one of the 11 specialty pamphlets, or you would like to find out who your certified specialists are in your area, anywhere in the state of California, you can either call the statewide number for the Board of Legal Specialization, 415-538-2100, 415-538-2100, or you can go to the website California Specialist, that's singular, by the way, californiaspecialist.org, and you will find the pamphlets there that are free, by the way, and you'll find out who you can find out by your geographic area, who your certified specialists are in your area. All right, it is about 7, right on the dot. Well, at least our clock, anyway. 728, 91.7 KALW in San Francisco. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. This is now the time, in case you would like to call in, make a comment, ask a question, have a little bit of a discussion. It's 1-415-841-4134. 1-415-841-4134. If you're anywhere in the state of California, and let's say you're listening to us on the internet, if you have radio on your computer at www.kow.org, you can also call that number if you'd like to join us on the air. 1-415-841-4134. Let me also make mention to you before we take our first call. If you are facing a foreclosure, and of course this has been a real problem for a good number of people, unfortunately, for quite some time, and it's still a problem, somewhere in the neighborhood of 2.5, maybe 3 weeks, actually it'll be 3 weeks, I guess, as of tomorrow, there will be a presentation on foreclosure. If you're facing a foreclosure, how an overview of foreclosure, how it works, workouts that may help save your home. It will be presented by two attorneys who are doing foreclosure work in San Mateo County, Ruben Nokos and Najib Kudia. And this will be on Thursday, May 10th at noon at the San Mateo County Law Library. You're invited to attend. It's a free lecture. The library does this every month, a different topic, of course, every month. You can bring your bag lunches if you wish. And it's at 710 Hamilton Street in Redwood City, right across from the Hall of Justice, where my office is on the third floor. And if you have further questions, you can call Karen, who's the librarian, at 650-363-4913. 650-363-4913. That's for Thursday, May 10th at noon. And so let's start with Guy. Guy, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hello, how are you?
Hi.
I have a question. Here it is. I am now a legal immigrant since 1989. In 1972, I was caught in an act of malicious mischief here in Berkeley, actually.
Mm.
And when I filled out my papers for the green card, I omitted this mention. And the reason I omitted it was a lawyer friend of mine, several years after the incident, and I'm not going to say expunged, I don't know exactly what the term is, but I was cleared of that conviction.
Was that a misdemeanor?
Well, okay. It was called malicious mischief.
I understand what it's called, but I'm wondering if you know if it was a felony or a misdemeanor.
Oh, I didn't realize.
Okay, all right. Well, go ahead.
It was shoplifting.
Okay. Yeah. And that's how much? How much was the value of what you shoplifted?
Oh, maybe $10.
Okay. It's probably actually an infraction, but go ahead.
Yeah. Okay, so here's the question. I did not mention this, as far as I remember, in 1989.
Yeah.
Believing that I'd been cleared and I'd been cleared for all. And
did you think, Guy, let me ask you this. Did you think you had been cleared prior to your filling out the application in 1989?
Yes.
You did. Okay, go ahead.
Well, that's about it. I'd like to know if I were to try for naturalization now, if that would be a problem.
Mm-hmm. No, Guy, I don't think it'll be a problem at all. Generally, the area of inquiry is the last 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
So this is way past that period.
So, Guy, are you telling us, and be honest with us, you're telling us you didn't have any sticky fingers in the last 5 years?
Exactly.
Huh? All right.
Yeah. Can I just
go ahead.
Push one more question?
Sure, go ahead.
The fact that I lied, essentially, for all intents and purposes, for these green card papers, is that going to be held against me? Because I would say the truth this time. I have no choice.
Yeah, but the point is, you believed, did you not, at the time you made your application, that this no longer was on your record? Isn't that your true belief or not?
It is. I even have the papers.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I am not an immigration attorney, but it seems to me that there was no intent to defraud.
Correct, yeah.
And I think that's the issue, Guy, the intent to defraud.
Mm-hmm, I see.
But you know what I would do, and if I may say this, as a consumer attorney in my position as a deputy DA, and I am not an immigration lawyer by any means, I do believe that it's worth it at this point, since you are very concerned about this, for you to see, if I may suggest, a certified specialist in immigration law.
Mm-hmm.
Really, I think it's worth it. Where do you live?
Oakland.
Yeah. Well, my suggestion is contact the Board of Legal Specialization, find out who the certified specialists are in immigration and nationality law, pardon me, mm-hmm. in Alameda County, and make an appointment to go in.
Why seek that sort of person rather than an immigration lawyer outright?
Oh, you can. I mean, this is a suggestion because you show a particular concern about this. And as I mentioned earlier, when you speak to a specialist, you're dealing with someone who focuses on these things specifically. But it does not prevent you from going to mm-hmm. to another lawyer, another
sure.
immigration lawyer,
of
who's not certified. Who's not
necessarily a lawyer, though, the certified specialist?
Well, you haven't listened to the earlier part of the program, I take it?
I did catch some of it, but that was never resolved.
Yeah, I think the point is, Guy, there are attorneys who are not certified specialists in areas that have been certified by the board who are very capable, no question. Mm-hmm. The point that we discussed earlier in the program in the first half hour is that someone who becomes a certified specialist has to go through, jump a lot of hurdles, actually, to do that. There's peer review, there's another exam, there's all kinds of stuff. So you're dealing with someone who purportedly would have a great deal of experience. And the point that Tony made, which I asked him, Guy, and I think you missed it, is that someone who's a certified specialist isn't necessarily charging more than someone who is not, who may well be well-versed in immigration law also. So, you know, it's a matter of, I think the basic thing is you need to speak to someone who does practice and practices a lot immigration law. So I wish you good luck.
Well, thanks very much.
Yeah, take care. Thanks very much for calling. The number is 1-415-841-4134, 1-415-841-4134. And in light of Guy's question about do I need to go to a certified specialist, let me mention this. If you have a legal problem, and this applies in every county in the state of California, this one is focusing from the San Francisco bar, but it applies to all bar associations and lawyer referral services throughout the state. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The Bar Association of San Francisco's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. This is a public service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. For a referral to a lawyer, call 415-989-1616. That's 415-989-1616. This information is brought to you by the Bar Association of San Francisco and KALW listeners like you. And guys, certainly the Alameda County Bar Association has a lawyer referral service that you can contact. I don't have the phone number, but you can certainly find it easily. If you are in San Mateo County, which is one of the other funders of this program, it also, the San Mateo County Bar, also has a lawyer referral service, and that number is 650-369-4149, 650-369-4149. If you're in any other county in the state of California and you are trying to find out who you may talk to and you want to go to the lawyer referral, you can call your own. Tell them what the problem is. They'll do their best to find someone who's experienced. They'll set up a half an hour consultation for you. And depending on the county, for half an hour, it may be a low of $25 or a high of $35. One of the things, also, Guy, that I think you missed was my question to Tony, that it is my impression, and I want you to know this, the Board of Legal Specialization has been funding this program for 22 years. I have a great relationship with the Board of Specialization. This is not a commercial, by the way. But I want you to know that what Tony and I discussed earlier in the first half hour was that a good number of the certified specialists will give an initial consultation without a charge. So when you call, if you are going to call a certified specialist, ask the office, is there a charge for the first consultation? And if they say yes, then find out, well, how much is it? And so, you know, do a little homework and you can find out. All right, here we go. Carl, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi, Chuck. I always enjoy the show.
And thank you.
I just had a very, very general question for your guest. And that was that I was on a jury recently in San Francisco in which both the defendant and the alleged victim were undocumented.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, our deliberations were fair. I thought nobody on the jury had any concern at all with that, which was great. But it did bring up the question to me that it seemed a little strange that the alleged victim didn't seem to have any problem interacting with the legal system. And I was just curious if your guest could talk about
it. Was this a domestic violence case?
It was, yeah.
Yeah. You know, that is something that the law in this state is very careful about. We are not, when I say we, I'm part of this system, at least in San Mateo County. The laws of domestic violence protect any person who is being physically abused, whether this is a documented woman or a citizen woman or an undocumented woman, or if someone is a man who is being abused in some kind of domestic situation, that person, also undocumented, is protected under our laws. So we don't discriminate. The law is such that people are not going to be, it's not going to be allowed that someone can be physically abused. If we did otherwise, and the thing is that the law, we want people to know that if you are physically abused, that you have a right under the law and you should call the police for your protection. So that's the reason there, Carl.
Okay, my question was basically, is that specific to domestic violence cases or the procedures for handling cases with undocumented people basically the same as for citizens?
What do you know about
no,
that?
No, I think it's specific. I mean, you have on the other hand, you have all of these other issues that come about when there was an agreement that if anyone who was arrested by the police who appeared to be undocumented was supposedly to be reported to mm-hmm. the federal immigration authorities. And, you know, that's looking at the other extreme, that there were agreements in force previously about that. I know that San Francisco has declined to be part of that sort of agreement.
I'll tell you one other thing, though, Carl, as long as you bring this up. I had a case going back some years ago where this man had some kind of a construction business, and he hired some undocumented workers, and he actually was violating rights in terms of not paying these people, by the way. Or paying them a wage that was under what should be paid under the state labor law code. And I brought an action against him to reimburse these people for non-payment. And so we do have labor laws that protect people who are doing manual labor who are being discriminated against because they're undocumented. So, but it's not in all areas, but that is something that under state law, there are protections for that. So thanks for calling.
Okay, thanks, Jeff.
Glad you did. Okay, this is Your Legal Rights, 1-415-841-4134. Again, next week we will do our Call a Lawyer night. We'll be doing employment law. We will have a couple of very outstanding attorneys, employment law attorneys, with us, Anthony on CD and Lisa Mackey. They're both very experienced. And we'll be talking about employment law issues as well as recent decisions, court decisions. And then, of course, we will have our Call a Lawyer, where you'll be able to talk with attorneys off the air, 1-800-525-9917. Claire, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you.
Sure.
So my question is, I am a British citizen, been here for about 25 years with a permanent residency, mm-hmm. Green card.
Yeah.
I know, as a citizen, I haven't become a U.S. citizen, so I can't vote, I can't do jury duty. But am I missing out on any property inheritance rights, either from my parents who are in the U.K. or any succession of property that would go to my sons who are American citizens?
Mm. That's an interesting question.
Yes, it is. Without getting more information, obviously, I tend to answer no. You don't miss out on
anything. You know, one of the things, Claire, is this something you're concerned when you talk about your parents who are in Britain?
Right.
Do they have property here in the United States that you might inherit, or are you talking about they leave you money in Britain and are you allowed to bring it into the United States? What are you? Don't go into a lot of detail, but just a little bit.
I think I'm concerned about real estate here.
Oh, you are? Okay.
Money, but if I want to give my real estate to my kids, is there any issue with inheritance that I'm not a citizen?
Are your kids, are they citizens. American citizens?
They are, yes.
Yeah, well, I don't see any problem with that. I think if I may suggest to you, because this is a significant issue that you are obviously concerned about, and it involves what probably is a substantial amount of worth of this property, I really think that you should go and get some legal advice. Have you thought of doing that?
Yeah.
And have you done it?
Not yet.
How long have you been thinking about this?
Not long enough, I see.
Oh, no. You've been thinking about it long enough. Now you got to do something.
Okay.
What I would suggest you do, we will have, for Call a Lawyer, just to get you kind of rev you up. This is kind of a mini Bunsen burner for you, Claire. Next week, we're going to do Call a Lawyer. And one of the attorneys will be a real estate attorney. And since you're concerned about real estate, he's a tax attorney, real estate attorney. He's not an immigration attorney. I think you might want to call him and next week for Call a Lawyer and talk with him and see what thoughts he might have. I really think you need to do this for yourself. You need to do it for your kids. Because if you inherit property from your parents, you're hoping to inherit property from your parents that's in the United States, you certainly would want to make sure that when you leave it to your kids, that you have the legal right to do it. My guts are telling me you would, but I think you really need to talk to an attorney about it.
I have a cautionary tale about the dual citizenship. My son has that, one of my sons.
Uh-huh.
He was abroad and went to the airport with his British passport in order to fly back. And they said, no, you can't board the plane. He didn't have his American passport with him. So when you have dual citizenship, you want to get back, you better make sure you have your American passport.
Well, how did he get back then?
I had to FedEx his passport.
Did you really? That's incredible.
Yeah.
So the London security people wouldn't let him leave London.
No.
Even though he had his British passport.
Right. They didn't think he could make it through to customs in the U.S.
Oh, they didn't. I see. They were trying to protect him from being grabbed once he hit American soil, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
He looked British at that point.
I guess Homeland Security is pretty scary at times.
Yeah,
well, thank you very much for calling. And join us, really, join us next week for Call a Lawyer, and maybe you'll get some pointers that will make you take the next step.
Thanks very much.
Okay, Claire. Thanks very much for calling. Bye-bye. All right. Carla, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hello. Well, Hi. This is the dual citizen that...
No. Oh, no. This is the one. You're the troublemaker.
I'm the troublmaker.
Oh, no, not Carla. Cut her off.
Claire her cautionary tale was part and parcel of what I meant about the red flag issue with Homeland Security, because... The last time I flew abroad, you have to list a passport number on your ticket.
Yeah.
And I listed an American passport, and I'm thinking of going again to visit family, but not just Italy. I was going to travel around other places. So if I put my American passport number on my flight ticket, maybe this was Clara's son's problem, is that he... boarded on his American passport, and coming back, he didn't show his American passport because he didn't bring it with him.
Good point.
Might have been the issue.
Yeah.
I take both with me.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I guess my question about the Homeland Security thing was more about if I fly out listing my Italian passport and I'm out of the country as an Italian citizen, quote-unquote, if something occurs to me, let's say I'm not in Italy, I'm in Spain or someplace else, and something occurs, and I really am an American citizen as well, will the American embassy in that country ignore me since they don't like dual citizenship?
Tell her. I see this man shaking his head.
No.
He's shaking his head. No.
No, you are a citizen of the United States as well, Carla. So you will not be ignored.
But while you're in Spain, you should apply for another citizenship, shouldn't you, Carla?
No,
I mean, so that
no,
you.
I think I'll stop here.
Yeah, please.
I'm a first generation American. My parents are both. Italian,
uh-huh.
And I believe my mother, when she was naturalized, she renounced her Italian citizenship.
Did she?
Was back in 1973.
The Italians may get even with you, though, Carla.
Yeah.
With that, I'd be very careful if I were you. Hey, thanks for calling.
Okay, thank you so much.
Don't do this again to us, Carla. All right, thank you very much for calling, and thank you for the suggestion about doing dual citizenship. By the way, coming back to Claire for a moment, Claire, the fellow that you want to talk to, if you join us for Call a Lawyer next Wednesday evening, is Frank Adam. He's a tax lawyer, a CPA, a real estate attorney, and you might just want to talk to him and see what suggestions he has for you. Okay, do we have anybody else? Not. We have a few minutes, by the way. Where you been, everybody? What's going on? What's going on? And let me give you the number again. By the way, it's 1-415-841-4134. 1-415-841-4134. My guest is Antonio Nieres. He's a member of the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. He's a specialist in immigration and nationality law, certified by the board. His offices are in Burlingame. Great friend of this program and of the audience, because he's given a great deal of his time on being a guest on the program, and also in the past being here for Call a Lawyer Nights. So if, by the way, anybody, we do have a few minutes left, if you would like to call in, ask a question, make a comment, please do so. Don't wait till the last minute. We have about 8 minutes left in the program, 1-415-841-4134. And by the way, I want to let you know that we are going to do a special program on May 16th. We will have we're postponing our landlord-tenant discussion until May 16th, and that will be in conjunction, believe it or not, with the next fundraiser, by the way. We will be doing that evening also a Call a Lawyer Night, so it's kind of a whammy, and I hope you will join us. Put it down if you got a landlord-tenant problem. That's Wednesday evening, May 16th. And let's see, who do we have now? Okay, Mike, welcome to Your Legal Rights. Mike, are you there? Hello? Maybe this isn't Mike. Who am I speaking to? Somebody there? All right. I don't know. Let's see. Martin, give me somebody else before we end up. Well, I don't know who that person is. All right. We'll do it. Tony, you wanted to say something.
I just wanted to make that point about the dual citizenship very clear. While I said that the U.S. generally looks with disfavor upon the maintenance of dual nationalities, dual citizenship or dual nationality is really a status long recognized in the law. I mean, the mere fact that one person asserts the rights of one citizenship does not, without more, mean that he renounces the other. Mm-hmm. I think that that's an important consideration. And everything else follows as a practicality. Mm-hmm. Having both passports, of course, would always serve that purpose. If you don't have the other, then practically you're going to come to a problem.
Yeah, so if you are a dual citizen, have your both passports and then you don't have a problem, hopefully.
Right.
Fred, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi. I'm an American citizen, multi-generational American citizen on all sides, and I recently applied to renew my passport. This would be a second renewal. And instead of receiving a passport back, I received what to me as an American citizen was a rather shocking amount of paperwork from the Charleston, South Carolina, United States State Department Passport Center. I, of course, turned in my expired passport, and the lady at the passport office where I went to process my application took a photocopy of my valid and current California driver's license. And basically, I got back a thing. I'm almost 50 years old. I've got to list every job I've had from age 0 to age 50,
wow,
my supervisor's names, their phone numbers. I have to list every address I've had from age 0 to age 50. And the really hard part is they want 5 forms of identification that are more than 5 years old, that have either my photograph or my signature on them. Luckily, I have 3 expired driver's licenses, and some of my wonderful friends I've had since high school are tracking down our high school yearbooks.
Oh, brother.
I have to say I'm a professional. Mm. I don't have a felony record or anything like that. I'm frankly just in utter shock, and I'm really scared. I have a really rare last name that not
don't tell us
in America has that I know of. My mother's maiden name was Hispanic. Her family goes back.
Let me stop you, Fred. Because we're nearly out of time. I want to have if you have some comments, general comments for him.
Fred, I think that the problem can be that you're being mistaken for somebody else.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like to me.
That just basically means...
What should he do with all this hassle? What can he do at this point, do you believe?
It's very difficult not to go through that whole process
they're asking for. Because if they think he has a name that sounds like somebody else who's probably a terrorist, they think he's a terrorist.
Well, think of something. I mean, something they think like that. That other person must have... Yeah. A name that's very similar, even if Fred doesn't think so himself.
So he should just weather the storm?
He has to. He has to weather the storm in order to get that passport.
Sorry, Fred. Sorry, we can't tell you anything. That's a shame. Good luck to you.
I mean, it's very irritating, but it's an irritation.
There's no easy answer here.
Yeah, you have to live with
Fred, this. Sorry for your problem. Thank you very much for calling. I do feel for you. Leah, you are our last person. Are you a dual citizen type also?
Well, my question, actually.
Go ahead.
Okay, I'm wondering if I could be a dual citizen.
Ah.
I'm a Dutch citizen. I was born in Holland and immigrated to the United States in 78. And whenever I try to call the Dutch embassy, I just don't get any clear answers.
Well, are you also an American citizen?
I'm not.
You're not? What are you doing here then? What are you doing? How are you here?
I'm an alien.
How are you here, by the way? And how long have you been here?
No, I have a green card.
Okay, all right. Alien. Okay.
What I have always heard is that I have to give up my Dutch citizenship if I become an American citizen. And...
Well, let me give Tony a chance to respond quickly.
You know, Leo, there's a listing of countries that support or reject dual nationality. I can give you a website. It's www.opm.gov/extra/investigate.
Really?
This would have a listing of countries that either support or reject dual nationalities. It's either you're able to retain your original nationality or you lose it when you apply when you obtain naturalization here in the United States. And I think that's helpful. Additionally, I wanted to point out that several countries have very specific requirements in order to retain. Sometimes it's as simple as informing the government. Sometimes it's a little bit more protracted, making reports and filling out specific forms for that.
We have come to the end of our program. Thank you, Tony, very much for joining us. It's been a pleasure having you here. Tony, J. Antonio Nieres, member of the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, certified specialist in immigration and nationality law, certified by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. His offices are in Burlingame. Tony, lovely to have you here.
Thank you very much, Jack.
Next week, by the way, it's employment law, recent court decisions. My guests will be attorneys, employment law attorneys, Anthony Onsidi and Lisa Mackey. It's also Call a Lawyer Night, 1-800-525-9917. Your Legal Rights production staff members are program engineer Debbie Kennedy. Debbie, very nice having you with us. Production assistant Martin McLean. Funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar of California. Additional funding is provided by the Trusts and Estate Section of the State Bar, the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar, the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, the California Applicants Attorneys Association, and the San Mateo County Bar Association. Thank you very much for joining us, and I hope you join us next week. I'm Chuck Finney.